What's up, everybody? We are back with another episode of Pound for Pound. I am the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
A Shot of Lime production.
Henry, man, the week is flying by. But you be seeing your boy out here, Henry. You see your boy out here. You see me last night at the Panther Stadium. Man, we were supposed to get it done in five, Henry. We were supposed to get the series done, but unfortunately, them boys from Edmonton came to play yesterday.
Yeah, they did. I tell you what, Kamaru, I had no idea you're a hockey fan, dude, you know?
Well, brothers like hockey too. You know what I mean? We like hockey too, but it's the Florida Panthers that got me this deep into hockey. I'm invested. I'm invested in the success of the team. I'm invested in the success of some of the players. And of course, you know, getting to attend the games with my dog, Mark Ingram. And big shout out to my man, Sean Thornton, too, that, you know, he was the bruiser. He was the, you know, when he played for the Panthers as well. But yeah, you know, being invited to the game. Last night, we were at the game with, my dog, Jalen Waddle. And that was my first time meeting him. A receiver for the Miami Dolphins, just got that nice little, you know, nice little signature check, you know. But it was cool just to be around him. A really cool guy, awesome kid. It was a great, great game. We started off slow. I think Edmonton came and they got real physical with us. And in that first, we gave up some kind of, you know, uncharacteristic goals. But I think towards the end, Florida started to get their momentum back and kind of get back into the groove of things. So I expect them to go get it done in Edmonton. If not, game seven, I'll be front and center, guys, and we're going to get it done.
Damn. So what's the series at right now, Kamaru? Because obviously, you just saw the shutdown that the Celtics put on Dallas, dude. Jesus.
Hey, don't remind me, bro. Don't remind me. You don't. Yo. These guys.
What's the series like, Kush?
Bro, these guys were down 3-0. We were up. Florida was up 3-0. And now this guy is 3-2. So now we're going back. We're going back to Edmonton. So where they have a chance to make it 3-3. But we ain't going to let that happen. But if we do decide, hey, it'll be more dramatic for us to win it at home, that's fine. We'll bring it back. Game seven, we're going to put it on them. So, yep, it happened. But, you know, don't remind me. Let's move on, man. I'm getting flashback from last night. I'm not happy right now. Let's move on. But, yeah, big announcement. Israel Adesanya, my Nigerian brother, is finally gonna get the shot against Drickus Duplessis. That's how you gotta say it. You gotta say it with some conviction like that. They're gonna be fighting UFC 305 in August 17th. I believe this is in Australia, Henry.
Yeah, it's gonna be in Perth, Australia. Ooh. This match has been sizzling for quite some time. I mean, this is a long ways to go for a guy like Drickus Duplessis to travel all the way down there in the man's backyard to potentially take this victory.
I mean, yeah, it's a long way, but he lives in South Africa. It's a long way for him to go anywhere. Let's just be honest. It ain't just because it's over there. It's a long ways for him to get anywhere. You all the way at the bottom in South Africa. I mean, yeah. To get here, it's a long ways. To get to Vegas, to get to anywhere, it's a long ways anyways. So I don't think that's going to bother him. I think it's going to be a tremendous fight. But to be honest with you, Henry, I like Israel Adesanya in a fight like this as opposed to a fight like with someone like Sean Strickland.
Deshaun?
Yeah, I like this fight. I think this possesses the things that gives Israel the ability to shine.
And I'm going to have to disagree, Kamaru. Mm. I think stylistically, Drickus, he's a mixer, bro. He does mix his fighting. And if Israel's not accustomed to somebody mixing, remember they rolled before. And even Israel Adesanya said, the dude put it on me, dude, when it came to the grappling stuff. Now imagine how much Drickus has gotten better with That's funny. Sean Strickland has Israel Adesanya and Sean Strickland has, you know, for Father's Day. That's hilarious. I don't know. Did he post that?
I don't know who posted that.
Did he post that? He did post that. Oh, he's trolling, dude.
Yeah, I mean, you got to do what you got to do to try to get that fight. But
going back, Kamaru, I think stylistically it does. I mean, the way that Israel Adesanya is going to have a more of a probability of actually winning, in my opinion, is going to be him really kicking him, investing in those kicks, catching that distance. But I just think Dricus is too smart, dude. Like, once he beat Robert Whittaker, I was like, I'm never going to doubt this dude again because he's a winner. He's a better competitor than he is a fighter. So for that reason, man, where my two cents, Kamaru, is going, I think the person that has more of that lead is Dricus du Plessis.
I can see how you come to that conclusion. You know, but the one thing about mixed martial arts is not necessarily 1 + 1 = 2. You know, sometimes 1 + 1 might equal 6. You know what I mean? And so in this case.
So how does Israel get it done?
I think Israel gets it done in typical Israel Adesanya fashion. If Izzy's mentally there in that fight, I think he gets it done in his typical fashion. Israel's going to break you down stylistically. He's going to kick you. You know, he's going to mix it up well until he finds the shot to potentially maybe get you out of there. Or, you know, he just basically schools you for 5 rounds. I think a fight like this gives Israel those challenges that you have to adapt to. And those are the challenges that when presented to Israel Adesanya, he can solve those puzzles very, very well. Marvin Vettori is kind of, you know, was able to mix it up with a guy like Israel Adesanya. And Israel was able to solve that. Jared Cannonier is a guy that can mix it up when he does choose to.
But he didn't.
Yeah, when he chooses to. But Israel still passes got through those tests, you know. So, but a guy like Sean Strickland, well, you knew exactly what Sean Strickland was going to do. He was going to spar with you. He's going to come forward. He's going to lift that leg up. He's going to give you that Philly shell, that shoulder roll. And you know, we saw how that threw Israel off.
Right, right, right. But this is what I will say, Kamaru. Does Israel Adesanya have the ability to make those adjustments?
Yeah.
Because he does. If he doesn't have the ability to make those, because he did it with Sean. This is all I'm saying. Does he have the ability to make the adjustments according to another style? And the way I see it with Dricus du Plessis is Dricus du Plessis is probably a C, maybe even a C minus in certain things, but he's able to mix it. He's able to make you work. The biggest trait that Dricus does have, you know where it's at, Kamaru? It's his ground and pound. The dude gets on top and actually hurts people. No,
he
no,
does.
No. I'm not taking anything away
from
him. He doesn't have the striking of Israel Adesanya. He doesn't necessarily have a lot of these great striking tools, but what he does has is the fact that he can take you down and then he can hurt you on top. I mean, it's a guy like Israel Adesanya going to be ready for that smoke. So that's all I'm saying. The path for victory for a guy like Israel Adesanya is going to be him catching distance, kicking the leg, and not allowing Dricus du Plessis stalk him, take away his leg kicks, and do the same thing that Sean did, was strike down the middle. Straight punches is what pretty much got Israel Adesanya beat his last fight.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a difficult fight. Dricus du Plessis is definitely, he's tough. You know, he's tough, and he's coming to his own as a fighter. And so I remember I sparred with him years and years and years ago, but you know, he's much, much different, much better, much improved now. And like I said, he's coming to his own as a fighter. And especially once you get that belt, it is true what they say. It puts an extra oomph, an extra battery in your back that, oh, all the work that I've done in my career actually paid off and it worked. So I'm going to hold on to this and I'm not going to let it go. So it's a great matchup. I'm anxious. I can't wait to watch it. I want to see how Israel is going to be able to solve those. But Israel usually is that guy that can't answer that call when he's asked to solve a puzzle. And let's see. Let's see how this one goes. All right, moving on. We've got Jake Paul now taking on the King of Violence, Mike Perry. Henry, and this is in July, I believe, July 20th. So, Henry, how you feel about this fight?
I think it's good. I think it's more favorable It's a more neutral matchup. You know, Mike Perry's got hands, but it also ain't bare knuckle. And I think bare knuckle, I think Mike Perry beats the brakes out of everybody because he don't give a flying fuck. But that also being said, I mean, he's going up against a dude that's been boxing. That has, I think, I want to say Jake Paul has about 10 pro fights now or 10 fights.
I think so.
Like, that's a grip, man. Like, it's different. So what he does have experience. I like the fight person. I think this fight is good, but should it be at the Arlington in Texas? Like, neither one of these dudes really have that massive power like Mike Tyson or you know, Conor McGregor. So if they're still going to do it at the AT&T Stadium?
I don't think it's still going to be at the AT&T. I think they might be doing it in a hall down the street.
It looks right here. Jake Paul will take place in Florida now.
In Tampa.
Yeah, you trying to get him a 5,000 seater, Kamaru?
Nah, I'm good. No, yeah. but wait, what arena's in Tampa? Does Tampa have a basketball team? Tampa doesn't have a basketball team. Where is that at? Tampa does.
It's the hockey.
I think that's too big of an arena, especially for a fight like this. I think a fight like this needs to be intimate. It is big implication. Like, people are gonna want to watch it because you've got the king of, you know, you got the king of violence fighting a guy like Jake Paul, who is now pretty experienced boxer. You know, so I think it's gonna be a good fight. I think it's a fight that a more favorable fight for Jake Paul. I think he is becoming more, he's a boxer now, you know, and I think he's getting that experience over time and time again of going into these camps, these training camps. So, you know, but like you mentioned, Henry, this is not bare knuckle. If it was bare knuckle, Mike Perry, I think, stops him, but this is not bare knuckle. And I think Jake Paul is going to be able to just box, and which is box, punch and not get hit and not get hit and just run around and move around. Well, not run around, but move around in that ring. So I like it for Jake Paul. And I think the arena should have been smaller. I think it should have been a little bit more intimate. So where you pack it out and then you get everybody on top of each other, that they can really experience the violence the way that bare knuckle does. So, yeah, I think this is a miss here, but it is what it is. And I guess
you got a prediction, Kamaru?
I think
pause.
Fucking dude, bro. I think honestly, not hating. I think Jake Paul outboxes him, and then it also depends. There's a few things too that you have to take account. How many rounds is it? Is it 8 rounds? Is it 6 rounds? Is it 10 rounds? So, you know, that's a big tell as well. And if it's a 10-round fight, yeah, then Jake Paul, I think it's 8 rounds. So it's an 8-round fight. So I still think it's a bit favorable to Jake Paul, because if you look at all Mike Perry's last, 6-7 fights have barely gone past, you know, third or fourth round, if they even got there. You know, Mike, and not to mention, those bare knuckle rounds are 2-minute rounds. So Mike Perry's used to getting people out of there quickly. You know, to actually build into a fight and take time to break a guy down systematically over time, I think this favors Jake Paul. And I like the fight for Jake Paul. I think this is a good building fight for him.
Yeah. Okay. All righty. Well, that's set in stone.
Yep. So you know what I've been doing this week. We caught up on the big news, the Israel Adesanya fight, and also Jake Paul taking on Mike Perry. Man, all that. And we ain't even there yet. But yes, you know, we got the pleasure to sit down with, obviously, a man that I know very well, Mr. Jorge Gamebred Masvidal. And we got to learn a lot about him. And we learned a lot about him, about his life, about his how he got his start. And, you know, him being such a big star in the combat sports world. I can't wait for us to get into that interview. And I can't wait for everyone to see it. So, you know what? Let's not waste no time. Let's go check it out.
All right, guys, before we get into the Jorge Masvidal interview, we just want to give a quick shout out to Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to place fantasy sports. Playing their pick'em game is simple as selecting higher or lower on a variety of player stats like significant strikes or takedown.
Underdog has one of the biggest offerings in the MMA game, and you can win up to 100 times your money. They also have picks for every other major sports like the NHL playoffs. Let's go, Panthers! You know it. Underdog is available in 30 states, including California, Texas, Arizona, and Florida.
These are our picks for UFC Fight Night this weekend. Whitaker versus Askarov. Live from the Kingdom Arena in Rawhide.
Riot, leave that in.
Live from
Riyadh.
All right. These are our picks for UFC Fight Night this week at Whitaker versus Askarov. Live from the Kingdom Arena in Rawhide.
Hey, it's Riyadh, bro. But it's going to be a wild weekend of fights, and Underdog Fantasy is the best place to get in on the action. Right now, all users to Underdog will receive up to $250 in bonus cash for their first deposit and pick 'em special. Use code pound for pound, that's P4P, when you sign up. Support the show and click the link below in the description to get started. Thank you, Underdog Fantasy, for always supporting the show. All right, now let's get back into it with Jorge Masvidal on Pound for Pound. Well, today we have an amazing guest. I know a lot of you thought this wouldn't happen, but we got an amazing guest today. You know, 2019 Fighter of the Year. Owner of the fastest knockout in UFC history and the original and former BMF champion, Jorge Gamebred Masvidal.
What an introduction. Perfect on this fucking name.
My man. See? Everybody I'll be listening.
Everybody butchers my name. This motherfucker got it right on point. Man.
That man right there is a butchering your name. Yeah. Come on, say it, Logan. Let's have our producer say it.
Massive a dial.
My man, George. First of all, thank you for your time. Thank you for being here with us. I know we've had a pass, but a lot of people from the outside don't really understand, what we do as gladiators when we step in there. But stepping out, we're humans. And we're, most importantly, we're men and of all.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to thank you for your time.
Yeah. We're competitors, so, and me and you never went on that personal line and shit. There's just one guy I won't even mention his bitch ass name. There's one dude that never under no circumstances, but everybody else that I've competed against or not, I wish nothing but the best for him in life. I wish that they all fucking go and do their thing and open up gyms or hit the lottery or whatever. But just one dude that, I can't stand this motherfucker. I can't even say his name because fucking police will show up on me and shit. But just this one dude is the only person. Outside of that, I respect everybody because I know how you made a living. And you might not know my training plan or not, but you know how I made the living as well. Yeah. You know what it takes to be here. So I respect every motherfucker that's gotten in the cage with me or just gotten in the cage, period,
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, George. It says a lot about you, man. Obviously, you guys have fought. You guys have fought on two occasions. And I think it's just cool, man. For me, man, be able to kind of see both. Like me and Demetrius Johnson, somehow we ended up becoming friends, dude. You know what I'm saying? And it was cool because we go to football games and shit like that. I'm just like, damn. Like you, when you build that camaraderie with somebody, you're it's pretty cool, man. Because obviously, with me and him, it's like we both went 1-1 with each other. But there's still that competitive side too.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a thing about at the elite level, we understand what it takes to get to the elite level, to get to that 0.1%.
Sacrifice.
Yes. And by understanding that, I think there's a certain respect that comes with that. That's why a lot of people, I hear people say all the time, I will never understand how you guys talk trash about each other and then you guys fight it out and then you guys hug it out at the end. People just can't understand that.
Wait, it's kind of like a basketball game. I feel like you have a shitty three-pointer and I'm like, well, this motherfucker has a shitty three-pointer. And you're like, well, you suck at fucking dunking. Is it really personal? No, it's, I'm giving you my opinion and you're giving me your opinion. We're selling the fight on top of it. So that's how it is in the fight. And then it gets a little bit more personal. Motherfucker says, oh, you're corny. The motherfucker says, you can't dress. But all in all, it's usually like fight related and shit. That's why it's like for us, I think it's like no biggie. As long as those lines don't get crossed, right? It's all fucking it's all fun and games and just hyping up the fight. And also, the most important thing is the mind games, you know, just getting under your fucking skin or you getting under my skin, shit like that, you know.
That's it. That's important. That's important that you say. It's important that you say that. Quick question I want to ask is because I do, you know, following you and what you've done in your career. You know, you were that guy who I don't necessarily need to talk. You know, I'm going to go in there and you know what I'm going to bring each and every time I step in there. And how do you see the game now? How you see it change? How do you see fighters nowadays changing? Because I almost feel like it's like you have to kind of build a brand.
Definitely.
You know, before you get Definitely. To the top.
Well, if we take it back to like, I don't know, maybe 12 years back, you had to be like 20-2 to get into it before the UFC would even look at you, you know? And it was just a different thing. And then dudes started talking a little bit more as they started climbing up the rank. Now, since the guys have their first UFC fight, they're fucking popping off. They're on TikTok. I'm going to be the next world champion. I'm going to beat this guy. I'm going to beat that guy. And it's just, it's way different, you know? And I get it though, because also this has changed up the game a lot. Yeah. You know, the amount of attention that you could get now. Any one of these little videos could go viral for these guys that don't even have like a following like that, but they do something that they get some like a million views and shit. So I see the game has changed a lot. And also how you get into the UFC now you get in with like 4-0. I've seen what's Dean, we were talking about it the other day. What's the guy that you said you saw like a 3-0 guy get into the UFC or something? I forgot.
Well, even like a guy like Bo Nickel.
Yeah.
You know, he's a special case though.
Yeah. Well, crazy wrestling accolades and that. He actually fought for my show a couple of times and then
those knockouts went a little viral.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you started understanding more of that like persona entertainment aspect towards the end of your career? Because you were kind of like, you just went out there, you know, you fought, you know, you had your own demeanor, but obviously, you know, once, you know, a lot of viral leaned things went
it.
On.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like you leaned into it.
Yeah, I definitely had
rightfully so.
What really helped with that was I went to this reality show. Yeah. Where I lasted about like 13 weeks and then every day was fucking this. It's like you wake up and there's fucking cameras. You go to sleep, there's cameras. There's fucking cameras on the roof. I'm talking to you. We're having a discussion about it. It's getting filmed all day long. So that got me really comfortable. And also when I was in that show, I was like, man, I've beaten a lot of good dudes and I don't have fucking any money in the bank account. I ain't got no fan base. I obviously know how to talk. I'm going to start talking as soon as I get back in this bitch. And it helped. I started knocking motherfuckers out and just talking, you know. And I used to interviews because of the media. I'd had like problems before in the past. I was kind of like anti-media. Like, man, fuck the media. They were switching my words around. When I took it the wrong way, I should have, you know, like, even if they don't fuck with me on that level, I got to use them for myself, you know. And then I understood that a lot better after that reality show. Like way, way fucking better on how to lean into them and how to just fucking get my point across. Yeah, you know?
So it almost seems like you almost kind of started to embrace it. And I think the biggest thing is
that's a good word.
It's just being fucking carefree. Like, of course, you dudes are gonna twist it, man. If it doesn't bleed, it doesn't read.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. But as I find your story unique because you know, as obviously Kamaru came to this country as an immigrant. You're an immigrant son, you know, a son of a Cuban immigrant, and obviously your mom's Peruvian. What I really find fascinating, like touching up on your story, and I've seen a lot of your ESPN stuff that they've done a lot of good things on you, but your dad, man, the way that he was able to build that damn raft and then come over to the Virgin Islands and eventually cross over to the U.S.
Yeah.
You as an immigrant son, how much did you have to witness watching your mother and your father struggle to make the American dream?
Oh, a lot. And then during that, so my dad gets locked up when I'm about to be 5 years old. So my mom sends me to Peru for about like 3 years and change, close to 4 years. So then I come back and it's like, now I'm a fucking full-blown immigrant because I don't know no English. Because when I left, I barely knew English. Shit. So when I came back, no English whatsoever. The Latin kids are making fun of me. They're fucking, you can't speak, you fucking rafter this or you fucking wetback that or fucking all that shit. And now I'm like, fuck, all right. You know, and that's where the skills started coming into play already. You know, the hands started to show. And from there, since my dad's not around, I'm just watching my mom. She's got like 2 full-time jobs and she's got this little part-time job. It's like I see her sporadically. Like sometimes I go a whole day without seeing her. And I understood since young, if you want something, there's only one way to get it done, and that's getting after it. And something also that was very, you know, because of my dad's story, was very politically charged room. like from my mom's side and my dad's side, like this is the greatest fucking country in the world. I was told that even if I didn't want to hear that. And I didn't understand it as a kid. I'm like, if this fucking country is so great, why the fuck you working 18 hours a day, lady? I don't get it. And we're still broke. She's like, this is still the greatest country in the world. And you'll figure it out one day. And yeah, it's hard right now. We got to get through this, but you'll figure it out. And same thing for my dad, I would hear. So hearing those things also made me like, all right, I'm in the right place. I just got to get after it. When I find what I'm going to do in life, I'm just going to fucking pursue that with everything, you know?
Yeah. And particularly too, man, like obviously your dad coming from a communist country, man. So I'm sure, you know, at that time, especially when he was an era of Fidel Castro, dude. Oh, you fuck around, find out. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
20 years.
I mean, yeah, of course, man. So it's almost like they instilled those values of what it's like to, same thing just like he was like, oh, dude, you know, be proud of being American. I'm like, what? You know, how come there ain't no food on the fridge? Yeah. why is there a sliced onion? Yeah. And on the middle, you know, in the middle of the freaking
rice and eggs.
You know what I'm saying?
And...
But I think as you get older, you start to really understand the hardships that, you know, that your parents have gone through. Yeah. And what is it that, you know, they're trying to pave the way for you. So it's almost like I even think about like Kamaru's story. Like this dude had to fucking go to the well to get water. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like you're talking about a kid from.
At what age did you come?
I think eight years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I did.
Oh, so you spent a good time there.
Yeah.
How was it for you, Kamaru?
It was, you know, when you're a kid, you don't know any, you're in the circumstance. You're just dealing with it.
So daily. Adaptable too.
Yeah. So you have to just kind of adapt and move. Yeah. Of course, I got teased. I didn't know the language very well. So kids
heavy,
used
you
to.
You have that heavy African accent? Let's hear it. Come on.
I don't know.
Bring it back. No, you do it all the time, motherfucker. Let's do it. Come on.
Listen. So. Why is this your go-to right now?
I try to get at you, you get at me too.
No, it's you know, kids are cruel.
Hell yeah.
You know, and kids would like make fun. Like, hey, call the teacher this. You know, and I would call the teacher that because I didn't know any better. Boom, now I'm in the principal's office.
Boom, not detention. About,
yeah, now in detention. Now I'm
might be suspended. Miss Ho.
Yeah, Miss Bitch or Bitch. I got in trouble for that one quite a bit. I'm like, what? Why is this? You know, and I'm just trying to, you know, kids, we're just trying to fit in and hang out with the other kids. But, you know, it was like that. But at the end of the day, kids are kids. Kids are cruel.
What state did you land in when you first got here?
Texas.
Okay.
Yeah, Arlington, Texas. And it was, you know, Texas is just Texas, you know. Things is good down there, but, you know, things can get a little hairy. But Texas, you know, it was cool. And I don't, from everything that it molded me into, I'm grateful. I mean, look where we ended up.
Yes, sir.
You know, and, you know, with that being said, I mean, going from all of that, how was that? When did that finally start to put the pieces together that, hey, I need to go do something out here, but what is it? What am I gonna do? What skills do I have in order to be able to change my circumstances or change my family's circumstances?
Shit, for me it was pretty easy because I was like the rowdiest kid in school you could have met. You know, like when I got back from Peru and fucking in the language barrier and a bunch of shit. So I was just like, I was in the short bus. I was in the special classes.
Fucking coming out of the joint.
And I was rowdy, dog. I was rowdy as fuck, bro. I couldn't sit still in class. I was in a learning disability. So I was like, man, this school shit is hard as fuck. And then
so,
I got
so
to.
So you, did they, when you crossed over from Peru to the US, were you actually like, did they have you like a special ed or something or?
Yeah. In the Spanish, I didn't speak no English, like no English. I barely spoke English because I grew up in the Latin community here in Miami until I was like four. So like my English was very limited. So now I go to Peru, no English whatsoever. When I come back, I don't speak English until I'm like 12 years old, that I'm like fluent and I could like dominate the language, you know. So then I have like special classes. I'm in like ESOL classes, was called, and all the you took those as well. ESO, I'm sure, of course. So I was all up and down them ESOL classes, getting in trouble. Then I get to middle school, shit. Now we got different teachers, we got different projects. There's girls giving me notes and shit. I'm like, bitch, I can't even understand the teacher. Now you distracting me with this note. And lunch? You want to get lunch? There goes class. I already forgot about everything I learned. So I already knew the school, man, school wasn't my thing. And right around 7, 8 years old, I never cared for like football. But I just couldn't watch it, and I didn't really understand it. To tell you the truth, you know, I'd watch and I was like, "That's pretty cool," but I didn't understand. First time I saw boxing, I was like, "The fuck is this? I love it." Shortly after, maybe like around 11 years old, I discover UFC 12 years old, and I'm like, fucking hooked for life. It just, I don't know if you guys remember the first time you guys saw UFC, but for me, it was like.
You remember who it was? Who fought?
I was definitely like Hoist Gracie, because I remember the dude with the pajamas, some shit like that. Dude with the fucking PJs, killing everybody. Boy, this dude is. He's missing the mask, but this dude is, what the fuck is he doing, bro? And I didn't understand. Then they had the dude with the glove. Yeah, the one dude with the glove. Yeah. I'm like, that's what I'm going for. He's a box. Oh, shit. This motherfucker got killed, bro. Shit, what's happening? Yeah. You know, so definitely that. Since I saw the UFC, I was like, man, I want to do that shit. I think I can do it, man. And then by the time I had seen the UFC, though, I was only like 12, 13. I had been in numerous scraps already, just like school stuff and neighborhood stuff like that. But I had done enough scraps that I knew, like, man, my hands ain't that bad. You know, I could defend myself all right, you know. And I liked it already too, you know, since I had a lot of turbulence growing up and stuff, it was like I didn't shy away from the problems. I wasn't necessarily looking for them, but man, if you were looking for me, you were going to find me real quick, you know? So I already was like very inclined to, man, I'm going to fucking fight and I'm going to make this a living. And when the UFC starts getting bigger, it's like I find out you do 4 fights in a day and you get $50,000, right, to win that tournament. I tell my mom when I'm like 14 years old, I go, Mom, don't worry about everything. Like, 4 or 5 years from now, you quit this shit. I can fight, get $50,000, 4 fights one night. She goes, bro, you crazy as fuck. And I go, I'm telling you, this is the play. I'm going to stick to this fighting shit, and it's going to grow. If it's $50,000 now, by the time I'm like 20-something, who knows what it's going to be. But this shit's going to fucking...
You're like, we're rich.
We're rich, mom. Calling them the future already, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like a calling, George. I mean, obviously, your upbringing, son of immigrants, you know... Fuck, hearing your story now, like your mom's working 12 to 18 hours a day. It's like, fuck, dude. It's almost like you almost kind of, whether you had brothers and sisters, you raise yourself in some ways.
That's why I was wild too, because once my mom had for a good time, she had that like 11 p.m. to like 7 a.m. shift at like Dollar Rental Car. So it was like, you know, I could
graveyard shift.
You know, I could take off, I could do little things in the neighborhood, then come back, no trouble, you know. So a lot of it was like me on my own, you know. And I also knew that, fuck, man, school shit just isn't for me. So if I fucking slept at school all day, I was like, no biggie, you know, this shit ain't for me.
And so that's how you got into the backyard fights with Kimbo?
The backyard fights is, Kimbo wasn't too far from a neighborhood that I grew up in. And we had some common friends in the same groups. And then at the same gym that I was at Miami at the time training, Kimbo starts training there, right? And it's like, Kimbo's already a fucking superstar at this moment. Like, I'm talking about...
He's like a street superstar.
Like, 30 million views on YouTube superstar. Michael Jackson would drop a video and he'd get like 1 million views. And this was when YouTube first came out, you know? And Kimbo was like, I swear to you, I can't think of a bigger name at the time that was getting more hits than Kimbo on YouTube. It's like one of these new guys that blows off on TikTok and they get 600 million views and like, oh shit, I was Kimbo back then. So when he was at the gym and he had already heard about me and stuff from other scraps and his boys knew me, they see me working at the gym. They're like, yo, why don't you come throw down the backyard? And at first I was like, what the fuck? This dude's inviting me to the fucking, to the backyard.
You're honored.
Bro, super duper honored. One, because he was from Miami, and two, because like everybody knew Kimbo. I'd walk with this guy down anywhere and it was just pandemonium. Everybody wanted a picture with him, everything. So it wasn't like I didn't think I was gonna get 30 million views in a thing, but I just knew this would open up a lot of doors for me. True. You know, so they offered me a fight and they're like, hey, you want to fight? And I was like, hell yeah. They're like, all right, we'll be in contact. It took maybe like 3 to 4 months till they reached back out, and back then the things were like on the super hush, super DL. So they were like, okay, hey, you still want to fight? And I was like, hell yeah. They're like, all right, we're gonna hit you back in about 2-3 weeks time with the place and the time and all that shit. So 3 weeks go by and no phone call, nothing. They finally call me on like a random Tuesday, Wednesday. It's like, yo, tomorrow we're gonna throw down. We're gonna call you and give you the time. Perfect. They call me the next day. I'm at McDonald's drive-thru about to get some food. And they're like, yo, you're scrapping 2 hours. Here's the address. Don't tell nobody. You can roll up with like 2-3 heads. I was like, perfect. I go straight over there. Obviously, I didn't get the McDonald's because I'm going to throw up if I eat this shit. I get over there, and I get there, and they're telling me Kimbo's going to go first. And I go, awesome. I'm going to get to fucking watch this dude fight. It's the most gangster shit ever. He pulls up and fucking escalate. The door opens up. There's more smoke than a volcano. This motherfucker takes his chain off.
And he's straight with it.
Straight with it. You can see it on the video. He opens, opens the thing. All smoke comes out. His partner, Icy Mike, is like, hold my chain. Come on, motherfucker. I need this bread. Pop, bing, pop, poof. Lays him out. Gets the next fight. Now I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to go next. And they tell me, no, no, no. The dude you're going to fight, he wants to fight another dude than you. I go, huh? He goes, what the fuck? And he goes, yeah, he wants to fight another dude. And then he's going to fight you. And I go, damn, I didn't know anything about the guy I'm fighting. I go, fucking fighting Bruce Lee? What is this motherfucker thinking? Okay. And I go, for a second there, I'm like, man, he's probably that good. And I go, or he's that stupid. You know, so I start warming up. And my coach goes and sees him. And literally the fight lasts like 20 seconds. Boom, he lays him out with a right hand. The guy that was with me at the time comes back. Yo, he's got a killer right hand, bro. He's got, watch out for the right hand. He's got like a sniper right hand. He's got a killer right hand. So that's all I knew about Buddy.
Yeah.
Before I
so
got
you didn't watch a fight. Your friend
no,
just
I didn't.
You.
I didn't know anything, you know, because the fights weren't set up like that. They just really weren't like giving you too much info on who you're fighting. Nothing. It's just like, how much you weigh? All right, cool. We got a guy for you. Boom.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's fun.
So and that, is that the viral video, the one that we watched?
That's the one in the laundromat.
In the laundromat.
Right behind the laundromat. And then the second one is in the house. Okay. It's in the backyard of a house.
Mm, and then that's after that is when you was on Kimbo's radar. This is my guy.
Yeah.
You know, and what was he calling you back then? Ponytail?
Ponytail.
Ponytail. Now that goes to show, like if you ain't nobody, nobody's gonna give you a nickname.
Yeah.
If you're not in his crew like that, if you're not cool like that. So obviously you did your thing. Obviously, is that the transition to where you started going to American Top Team?
Shortly after that, maybe like 2 years later, I joined American Top Team.
And so you're backyard fighting for a couple years then?
I was like pretty young when I started, you know, and then I did those two Kimbo fights. And then before that, I had like other backyard fights, but it wasn't nothing big or nothing. It was just like so-and-so's friend is really good and scraps all the time. Bro, you want to scrap him? All right, cool. We throw the gloves on and fucking me and my five boys come up with like $30 a piece. And you guys have like $150 and we bet on it like that. And I did a couple of those. And that's how kind of Kimbo found out, because he had heard that I was fighting around, and then boom.
He was like, this dude's fighting for free.
Basically.
And a lot of people don't know this, man. Because obviously when you go to, especially backyard, whether they're parties or fights, shit always goes down. People getting stabbed.
Yeah.
People coming in with guns.
Yeah.
I mean, did you ever have to go through some shit like that where everybody had to pretty much scramble and go home?
The second time I fought with Ray, as he rolled deep, he rolled with like 20 fucking dudes there and shit. And one of them got fucking way out of pocket, you know. And, you know, I only had like four or five dudes, but the dudes that I brought with me were like well equipped for the situation. They weren't fighters, but they were going to be able to handle whatever happened, you know. And nothing escalated. And I always thank God, because who knows what happens once these things escalate. But one dude got out of hand, you know, because he was fucking like 240 pounds, 6'4", right? And he's, after the fight, he's like, my boy fought another dude. And then he fought you the first time, so it ain't fair, you know. You should have to fight another dude. And he said to me, this is after the second fight. We just went for like 10 minutes. And I'm like sitting down, catching my breath. I'm drinking water. Me and Ray just had like a beautiful moment. We like shook hands, hugged it out. And we're just talking back and forth. And he's like, damn, I really trained my ass off for this one. He's like, bro, kid, you got it, man. Like, chase his dream. He's telling me, like, go fighting hard, man. Like,
that's what's up.
I worked my ass off for this fight. I really dialed in. He had lost like 15 pounds for the rematch. He was like in really good shape, you know, in the show.
Oh shit. So you guys even did a whole rematch. Like, he was like, I want this kid again.
He did the rematch, and I was like, fuck yeah, I'll do the rematch, you know. Fuck yeah, let's do it. So this other dude starts popping off, and he's talking for like 3-4 minutes while I'm catching my breath. All right, I'm like, all right, I get my breath. Icy Mike, the guy that used to organize the whole thing, is right there. And I go, Mike, give me 3 rocks, I'll wax this dude right fucking now, bro. I get up, put my mouthpiece on, and the guy immediately goes, no, I didn't mean right now. I go, bro, you've been talking shit for like 5 minutes, let's go. So his people start getting rowdy, my people start getting rowdy. Then Kimbo just went in there like always, like the fucking gorilla that he's like, yo, y'all shut the fuck up, let these motherfuckers handle it. Yo, Ponytail, you want scrap right now? Yo, what's up with you, you want scrap? Nah, I mean, then shut the fuck up.
So you're talking about the guy that was 240 pounds, 6'4". Yeah. Is that the guy you're talking about?
Like one of Ray's boys. I forgot his fucking name. Some corny motherfucker.
And he bitched out pretty much.
Bitched the fuck out. Kimbo put him in his place. You're not going to fight right now? Shut the fuck up. And dude fucking went away. Oh, shit. Yeah. And then after that, that shit. It was just because they had so many people then. And a lot of the people that he had, I knew some of them. They weren't like role models, you know, to say the least. They were troublesome people. And the people that I brought were also like troublesome people. So that moment could have very easily escalated to something else.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously starting out like that, you know, often we see that a lot of, you know, sometimes the harsh upbringing and the harsh things that we go through often propels you to some of the great things that you do later on in life. I mean, you went through that, obviously training at American Top Team, obviously getting into MMA, and you're one of the one guys that has fought literally freaking everywhere. I mean, you have what, over 52 professional fights? I mean, first time I remember hearing of you, you didn't fought in Strike Force, you done fought in Bulldog fights.
Yeah, Bulldog, yeah.
You done fought in
Story, boy, you know. Yeah,
all these different places. And you and I had our moment to where, you know, you be beating guys up from all these different promotions to where you finally get into the UFC after the merger.
UFC, yeah,
exactly. After the merger with UFC acquiring Strike Force. And they didn't keep everybody.
Yeah.
So that goes to show, like, they saw that, like, this dude's good. Because
it took them a while, because at first,
and
they tried my ass. They didn't let me fight. Really? And at 55, I was ranked number one at Strikeforce. The champ was Gilbert. And I had, my only loss was to Gilbert, you know, in a 5-round decision. Everybody that came over from Strikeforce immediately got, like, top 5, top 10 fights.
I do remember
they were in
that.
The top 10. Me, they gave me, like, everybody outside the top 15. And it wasn't until I moved up to 170 that they finally gave me a ranked guy in the top 10. So I always fucking like held that against him. I was like fucking crazy, you know. I always wanted to fight their top guys at 55. You know?
Yeah, I do remember that. I do remember you being kind of frustrated with them not giving you. But to their defense, and I think you realize this towards the later part of your career, your stint in the UFC, to their defense is you were going out there. Yeah, you were sharper than everybody. Yeah, you were making guys kind of look silly, but you weren't baptizing guys.
Yeah, yeah, I wasn't.
Like the end, the later part of your career, you weren't baptizing guys, and you were losing these split decisions here. Yeah. You'd win some, you lose these split decisions. And I remember you being first, and it wasn't like the skills weren't there. You definitely had the skills. We could see that. But it was when you ultimately said, I'm in
knock
here
these motherfuckers
to put
dead,
these guys
bro.
Out, and you saw the result.
Yeah,
you went, and it was, and me being a competitor, having to fight you, I remember being mad at that. I was a little bit envious, and I'm like, what the fuck?
What's he on?
Why the fuck is this guy? At one point, I'm like, why is this guy bigger than me? I'm here. I'm grinding, being quietly grinding to get here. And this guy's talking now, but it wasn't just you talking. It was you talking and you performing, putting that on there. And talk a little bit more about that. I know you said you went on that reality show, but where was that mindset switch? Where it was, because you lose to, I believe, Damian Maia.
Yeah.
Before you took, what is like a year stint off, went and did your thing. And then you came back with vengeance.
Yeah, but even prior to that, I remember first watching George. And whenever he put the hands on Isla Quinta, somehow fucking he ended up winning. I'm like, what the fuck?
He dropped him. Isla Quinta.
Dropped him twice in the first round. Dropped him in the second round.
Another split decision loss.
Didn't give up a takedown. Took him down. Threw more shots. Landed more shots. All the stats. And I was just like, man, I don't fucking get it, bro. Like, damn. You know? And I was like frustrated about that. So then eventually I moved up to 70. I got a couple guys out. Then I lost to Damian Maia. And then I had some injuries, you know. And during the injury time, the UFC wasn't offering me like no top 10 guys, you know. And I had one, after losing to Maia and Thompson, I was still like number 5 or something like that, number 6. But I wasn't able to get no top 5, top 10 guys, I remember, after I was getting better from my injuries, you know. So I keep getting this offer for a reality show, and I'm like, when I first, my ex-manager at the time calls me, he's like, yo, we got this reality show for you. And I'm like, you got what? reality show. Oh, okay, cool. I straight up hung up on his ass because all I'm thinking about reality shows, I don't really watch TV. And the only reality that comes to my mind is like Real World or some MTV shit. And I go, are you crazy, bro? I'll go to jail. If it's not the Ultimate Fighter, like I'll go to jail. You're going to have me in there with some fucking idiots. I'll go to jail, bro. They play with my food and like, you know, do something. I'll go to jail, dog. You stupid?
Yes,
you
know? They do that.
So fucking... No, you know, they called me a second time. They raised up the offer. Look, hey, man, listen to me. I got this reality show. They just bumped up the offer. I go, bro, you want me to go? Like, I don't get it. Listen to me. It's not really a reality show. It's like Ninja Warrior meets Survivor. And you're going to be out there. You get a little bit of bread every week if you survive, you know. You ain't getting no fights right now. What you want to do? And you're still healing up from the injury. And I was like, nah, bro, that's too little bit of money, man. I can't fucking sell my soul for that shit, dog.
Yeah.
They call me like a week before the show starts. Hey, they really want you. They up the money. This is what it'll be. You want to go or what? I was like, you know what? I'll go for like 1 or 2 weeks, collect the weekly check, and then whatever. Fucking, you know? Once I got in there, though I never did any of this shit in my life, the competitive in me took over, and I ended up going almost to the end. I was there for like 13 weeks.
Shit, and, that
yeah,
long?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Shoot.
And while I was in there, there's no TV, no phone, no music, and no outside contact to the world. So you had to... They took all your basic rights so you'd be able to, I want to call my kid. You have to win this stupid fucking game to be able to call your family and have like a 15-minute fucking conversation. It was like the stupidest fucking shit ever. So while I'm in there, I got a lot of alone time. And since we were in the Dominican Republic, a lot of it was nature for me. I got to be in the nature like a lot. And I'm somebody that just loves nature. So it was a group of like 10 of us. I would just always just take off, go on my hikes to find fruit. Because another thing was that if your team didn't win, you didn't get fed. And what they gave you was like the most basic of necessities. Like on my contract, and I had to put this in my contract, was every day, no matter what, I would get a bowl of white rice. No matter what fucking happened, you know? So I would get that bowl of white rice, but that was it. The rest, we had to fend for ourselves, whether you were eating coconuts or getting fucking fruits or whatever. So I got good at just getting fucking lost and then seeing what fruits I could find and shit like that. And in that time, you know, besides spending a lot of time with myself and God, the same thing kept coming to my mind. Like, man, I want to go back to fighting. Because when I was going into the show, I wasn't sure. I was like, man, maybe I'm done with this shit. You know, I got these injuries, you know? They don't go away. I don't fucking, you know, I haven't been feeling the best ever. And the same thing, the same after being alone with yourself enough times, you'll get that voice that is truly your voice. It's not your opinion. It's not like here, it's different to hear that voice. Cause you wake up in the morning and he calls you and tells you, man, I got a flat tire. Come over here and help me change this flat tire. Your train of thought has just been moved. You're still going to go to the gym. You're still going to do things, but your train of thought is not exactly your train of thought. Because now when you get there to help him out, he's going to tell you about his date last night and this and that. Now your fucking mind's in another place and it ain't really your thoughts. But when you're out there so long isolated, it's like you could hear this voice that is your inner voice for real. And in there, all I kept hearing was, fuck, we got to go back to fighting. We can't leave like this. And I had one good thing. I had 16 years of data that I had there. That I had mapped out 16 years of doing good things, bad things in the sport, and the decisions I made before those fights to get those, you know, consequences or rewards. So I started fucking reverse engineering and just like, damn, that one time I went out on a fucking Thursday night and party with Cejudo and fucking got drunk before the weigh-ins and this and that. Dude, the fight didn't go that well. The fight didn't go that well. So you know what? I can't do that shit no more. That's scratch this. And then, you know, by the time I knocked this dude out, shit, I actually ate clean for like 6-7 weeks and I felt real good. Okay, I'm gonna keep that, you know? And like that, I went A through Z. And I had a blueprint. Now that blueprint, all it was missing was like fucking conviction. Like, bro, I'm gonna fucking stick to this tooth and nail and I'm gonna see where it goes. And I did. And as soon as I did, I got instant gratification. I got fight of the year, knockout of the year, fastest knockout, all this shit. So it was fucking, it was great.
But once you came out of the show, correct me if I'm wrong, was Darren Till your first fight? Once you got, dude. So you know what they're trying to do.
Yeah, for sure. He was number three at the time.
At that time, Darren Till was hot.
He was number three because he had just lost to Woodley. Yeah, and he was number three at the time. Yeah. And I had been trying to fight everybody. And when I came out, I was like, yeah, I'll fight anybody that's in the top 5, top 10. Just give me fucking like a fight. And nobody wanted to fight Darren Till or I don't know what's going on. Nobody wanted to fight him in England, I think was the situation. And I was like, bro, I'll fucking do it, you know? And I had been training already for a fight. I just didn't know who it was going to be. I was just training like fucking. I had a lot of energy of wanting to train because I had missed it so much. All I was doing in the show was like, I'd shadow box, I'd run in the sand. I had some hill sprints that I could hit every day, but there was nobody to like the fucking workout with. So you like miss it, bro. I really just wanted to fucking miss it. So I was in the gym with no fight, 4 or 5 hours every day, no questions asked. So when the Till fight came up, I was like, 100% I'm taking this fucking fight. And boom, the show gets started, you know?
Yeah, and I almost feel like that with you too, Kamaru. I feel like obviously you were going undefeated, Kamaru, but there's that one point just like, damn, dude, Kamaru really's putting things together. Like, he's really confusing these dudes. You got the level change overhands. Like, you're really, you know, there came to a point where you weren't even losing to Dan Brown. Like, what was that switch for you as well?
I was a fan of it's like a secret fan of some guys in guys in my division, guys in other divisions. I was like secret fan. Like, I remember with you, watching you, I was a fan early on because you were already in the UFC doing your thing when I was on Tough. Remember the first time we met.
I watched you fight like live 3 or 4 times in that
and
show.
And so,
beat a baller, motherfuckers, at ATT, man.
ATT killer.
He is, bro. I fucking hate to admit it, but he beat everybody on that damn show, bro.
And with me, being a wrestler, and that was like my gift. I was like, no, I could take anyone down. I was just like, damn. This guy's slick boxing. He's really fast with his hands. But how, for the life of me, I can't understand how he's so straight upright. Because, you know, when people are fighting a wrestler, they realize they're fighting a wrestler. They get in this crouched over stance. Yeah. They're worried about that takedown. I was like, how is it that this guy's standing straight up? He's in this Muay Thai / boxing stance. But guys can't take him down and hold him down. What? And his punches are clean. So I was a fan of that. Of course, fan of John Jones and Anderson Silva and all these guys. And I'm like, yeah, I'm beating all these guys. But people paid to watch fighting. And I'm not going to lie. I'm be honest. This was something that you said that kind of hit me. And it did make me a little salty. You're like, I don't want to see people hump my leg. And it was like a joke. But I was like, fuck. I'm holding these guys down and just beat their ass. But goddamn, that's funny. And that's kind of right. I was like, they pay to watch a fight. They want to see us as men throw hands. Yeah, they can go down to the ground. But they want to see damage. Yeah. And taking them down, controlling them, and just completely taking them out, which I love to do, but it wasn't enough.
So what he said about you, did that push you to really fucking? Cause
yeah, it pissed me off. It pissed me off. I was like, shit, damn, that's funny. It sucks. I feel it, but it's funny because it's like, yeah, like I said, I'm my biggest fan. Yeah. So, and when I started getting kind of bored with watching me dominate a guy on the ground.
He just said,
fuck that. No, I liked it. I like watching myself throw punches more.
And it opens up so much because you have so much credit. Like, don't let this guy near your leg because he's going to take you down. He's going to make your life impossible to get up. So now I'm like,
yeah.
And then, you know?
And
fucking down blocking for me.
Yeah. And I'm a fan of all these guys and I'm watching and I'm like, okay, I got to change things up.
Yeah.
And that's when I fought Sean Strickland. Oof. And after Sean Strickland was Wally Alves, and he was like the Brazilian killer guy. But it was like, for the first round, I was like, I'm showing him. And I would just realize after round one how tired these guys were from thinking I'm going to take him down. When deep down inside, I'm like, I'm going to figure out how to put my hands on this guy and hit him. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
They're really worried about that.
You almost started to, it's almost like, knocking somebody out, it's a fucking attitude. We all have power in these hands. Now, do you have the attitude to go out there and say, hey, I'm going to finish you?
Yeah, I'm going to try. At least try. Because but before
you also
got
to get that range, and that comes with like time.
And that comes with time of training. But before like, that, it was, I needed to win. Because
at
that point, if you don't win, it's two wins. Checks. Yeah, I needed to win. I needed to win and win and win and move up. And, you know, that was like the turning point for me. But watching you come back after the reality show. And loosely, I was a fan of the sport to where I watched everyone. I'm like, I need to know what this guy's doing. And you come back, and this goes to attest to just how great this sport is. And we have to talk about it. You come back and you baptize Darren Till. And they're like, oh, who's next? Because you're right there in the top five. Till's, I think, three.
Yeah, at the time
you just get rid of him.
Yeah.
And one and two are kind of like you, I think it's like Robbie Woodley. It's like, oh, I'm not fighting them. you know, who else? Then everyone's trying to figure out who you're gonna fight. And then it's like, oh, Askren is there. And he's a hot thing at that point. He's like the new hot chick at that point.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I definitely Masvidal not taking that fight because he's said numerous times he doesn't want to deal with wrestlers that hump his leg and this and that. And that's literally all Ben Askren's gonna try to do. And then, like I said, going to show how great this sport is and how unpredictable it is.
Unpredictable.
You go out there and you, the probably one of the most, and I, yeah, it's a flying knee, but I say one of the most violent because of, he was out for almost like 2-3 minutes. Mm-hmm. He was out. And I remember, I was there live. Yeah, and I remember watching like, oh, he's still stiff. Not as easy out, but he's still stiff.
You're the stiff meister.
And and then all that happens. And then I that was 2019. And then I think maybe a year later, you and I fight.
Yeah.
And then boom. One
of the craziest circumstances, fucking crazy middle of Corona.
Middle of the Corona, you fly all the way over and take the fight. And I will have to say, and I'm gonna be honest about this. For one of the first times, of course we get nervous for every fight. But one of the first times, it got to me. Everything around me got to me because, bro, they're playing your viral knockout. Like I said, one of the most viral knockout ever. They're playing that thing every freaking minute on every channel, everywhere, on all the socials, everywhere. And I'm like, oh, this guy's trying to come in on 6 days notice. Now I'm trying to make the mental switch. Like, oh, I'm going to be fighting a different style. You know, he's fast hands. He's good counterpuncher. I'm trying to picture all this, but I'm seeing this every day. And they're asking me every interview, how are you going to deal with this? And I'm watching your interviews and I'm going to baptize this guy. And it fucking gets
like,
to me.
No,
I'm in the hotel. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh shit. Is he going to baptize me? What the fuck is this? And I'm in the hotel. And I'm super nervous for this, especially that moment before you go to the arena for the fight. And I'm in my room just like, why the fuck am I so nervous right now? Get it together, get it together. And I would say that was probably one of the most nerve-wracking fights that I had.
But also all the circumstances fucking dealing with. It was a fucking,
but moving moving past and all that.
And then we got
in the second fight. Of course, the knockout happens. And moving past that, the year later, I'm knocked out.
Which I thought in that fight was where I had seen you evolve the most. Because I was watching that when I was like, fuck, this dude's really taking the fucking striking.
Masterpiece.
Everything to the, you're beating the fucking dog shit out of Leon and then lightning strikes, bro, you know?
Yeah, and like it's a different respect that it teaches you. And of course, we have the respect for the sport because we trained and we worked hard the whole time. But it teaches you another level. Like,
nobody's God in this sport. No one's unbeatable, untouchable. You hang around long enough, anything can happen, man.
You're going good if you hang around long enough.
Well, in that fight, you were fucking doing great. I was like, I remember even writing about it, like, damn, this motherfucker is doing great, bro. Shit, you know, like on Twitter and stuff. Because your hands, you're laying. He was letting the hands go. He was landing body shots.
Yeah.
And you the whole time just backing it up and faking the takedown and then fuck, bro. And you weren't even tired in the fifth round. You didn't look tired enough, but it just happens, bro.
Yeah, it happens. But for me, it was like, boom. Damn, I love it. All I could remember saying and thinking is like, damn, I love the sport. Because it's like anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
You are not invincible.
Then you get in the same fucking predicament. You take a fight. I seen this motherfucker out. I ain't gonna say where, but I seen this motherfucker out. Right? So I'm walking in this place and I hear Masvidal. I go, and somebody touches me. I go, ain't nobody touch me, dog. I was fucking literate. And I turn around, I go, what the fuck? What are you doing here, motherfucker? He goes, man, just chilling. What are you doing here? I go, but I live here, man. He's like, all right, cool. Yeah. One day later, this motherfucker's flying halfway across the world to go fight fucking this dude.
Hamzat.
Oh, Hamzat. Okay, yeah. So you guys had a chance to kind of hash it out, too, when you guys saw each other. Like, it wasn't, like, there was no, obviously.
No,
you
even
guys,
before that, I wasn't, you know.
Well, I think, there's respect there.
Yeah,
I could see
I think the biggest thing, too, is we were very good businessmen. yeah. together. We were business partners. Yeah. We were good business partners. We did good business. Yeah. I mean, we're still top five.
Yeah.
Did you get time. Some of that paper?
We did one. Point? Yeah,
God. We're top five of all time.
Yeah, we did 1.2, 1.3 on that show.
And so, which, you know, shout out to the UFC and everything that they, you know, that they do, and obviously the platform that they give us. But, you know, we're still top five, yeah. and we did great business both times.
Yeah.
And another, I would bring this up too. Another thing too that kind of got to me in that, with the rematch, going into that rematch, it was, I was really, you fired me up in wanting to prepare even more for that fight. But then when we get there throughout the whole week, I live in Florida. I've been in Florida for my whole career, and I'm booed everywhere. That goes to show the power that you had and how big you were in the sport and in the company at that time. We're in Jacksonville. I'm the champion now, and I'm booed. And I remember in the press conference, I'm trying to talk, and the fucking fans are going back and forth at me. And then and I'm like,
wild, man.
I wanted to blurt out. I live in Florida too, motherfucker.
And it was the first show back to full capacity, which was fucking. Yes. Yeah, the fans were extra rowdy.
We were the first fight back.
To set the tone first back card. For the whole world.
For the world.
For the whole fucking world. Also,
the first sporting event back with a live audience.
Mm-hmm.
We did what we did. But I do remember that was a thing that was just like, what the, this guy is big. Really big, because it was Jacksonville. That was like, what, 6-hour drive from Miami, from Florida. 6-8 hours,
some shit like that.
Yeah, and people made the ride all the way up. Fast forward into even you fighting your last fight in the UFC in Miami. And like before, there was a reason the UFC wasn't coming to Miami like that. One, they hadn't had a star that could command the presence, because there's so much to do in Miami.
Sporting events don't do that well. And the UFC had gone there
before,
20 years. And I was there at that show, actually. I was 17, about to turn 18. And it was a great card. Matt Hughes fought Sean Sherk. Rich Franklin fought, rest in peace,
Evan Tanner.
Yeah. Fought Evan Tanner there for the second time. Pete Spratt fought Robbie Lawler. So this was like a fight fans fucking card.
Pete Spratt was good.
Pete Spratt was nasty.
That's the one he leg kicked the shit.
Yeah, but he fucking took Robbie's leg out or hip out, some crazy shit. And it was like, fuck, bro, what a great card. I forgot the Japanese guy that fought in the Carl Una, I think, fought there. Genki Sudo fought in there. So I was like, fucking what a card. The tickets were dirt cheap and this place was completely fucking empty. It was like, I was able to buy the cheapest seat ever and walk right on down and fucking almost had floor seats. So it was like, fuck, man, I don't think the UFC ever come back here, because everywhere else they were already starting like pop. And Dana would always say, we're not going back to the UFC. And they would ask me like, hey, you want to headline Miami or you want to do something in Miami? I'm like, nah, fuck that. I don't want to fucking fight here. My home is the road already. It's been so long removed that I fight in that place. Let me just fight everywhere else so I don't have to deal with that, you know?
Yeah, I think you helped spark that though, because now.
Yeah, now they're going back every
now. And that started with having you on that card, I think, propelled it completely.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and.
Yeah, but not just that too. Kamaru, I almost feel like George is in one of those situations where when a fighter comes out of the UFC, like, you almost want to be in a situation. You know, he fought for a title that they call the BMF.
Yeah.
You're able to fight, you know, another big, you know, fucking Nate Diaz is, you know, tough fighter, veteran of the game, always down a scrap. How was that, man? How was that? Like, you know, when they started that whole tour with you,
because
you guys really didn't talk that much shit about each
other. Yeah. You know, he had a lot of respect for me and I had a lot of respect for him. And it's just kind of like, all right, let's just fucking get after it. I would say shit like, I'm going to knock this dude out and this and that, because I always want to project what I'm going to do to a motherfucker, you know? And it was cool. You know, we went to New York. They did some cool shit over there. I think it was in Brooklyn that they took us to. And maybe one other place we did a press conference at. And it was dope. But more than anything, I just wanted to fight, man. I had like so much good energy in me coming off the show, having been away. And all I was doing, I was just training. And I don't think I was going to fight anymore because though the fight only lasted 5 seconds, I had fucked up my hand really bad in the Ben Askren camp, like really fucking bad, to the point where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to fight this fucking year, you know? And then they gave me the opportunity and I was like, fuck it, cortisone, stem cell, whatever it is, but I'm going to take this fucking fight and take this dude's head off. And then stylistically, me and Nate, though, we had been at different weights. We had always been around each other. And he was at 55 and I was at 55 and then I was at 70, he was at 70. So I was like, this is a good fight for me stylistically. I'm faster, I'm stronger than this guy. And Nate's very stuck on his just boxing ways. And then if you take him down, he's a threat. But wrestling-wise, he poses no threat to me, you know? So I'm like, bro, fuck yeah, I want this fight, you know?
Yeah, because I remember when they called the fight, you know, Nate Diaz said, you know, you may be a East Coast gangster, but you ain't no West Coast gangster.
Yeah.
And I remember when the camera, when they panned on you, you're just sitting there fucking smiling.
Yeah.
Ching, 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 ching,
ching, ching, ching, ching. I'm going to chop your ass up, man. I had studied him so much, like how you studied everybody. I was always watching Nate because we were around the same weights, you know. So I knew, man, there's a lot of good things for me in this fight. You know, I'm going to be able to fucking poke right at him with these holes that he has, man.
Yeah, you went to the body, you leg kicked, you went to the body, like you just mixed it. Like your distance was different. Like you're more MMA, and Nate was just like, as you said, he was just boxing. Just
standing there like one, two, you know, I was like, all right, keep trying to touch me with that.
So you get through all that. You did amazing things, fought for the title twice, the original BMF in the UFC, and you retire. And less than a year, you're 39 now. Why come back to fighting?
Many reasons. One, obviously, like all of us here, you gotta go out on W, dog. We ain't losers, man. I can't go out on no L. For myself, for my people, for my family, I can't go out on no L, you know. So actually my boy over there was the one that talked me into it. He's like, man, I got a good deal for you. It's just straight boxing. You got to deal with the wrestling motherfuckers no more, man. Straight boxing. You want to do this? I go, man, what do you mean boxing, motherfucker? I'm signed to the UFC. You stupid, bro. I'm like, on a contract. It's not like I retire, just walk away. He goes, let me work on that. Just give me some time. I just need to know, you okay with these numbers? And would you want to box and take it seriously? I was like, bro, serious is a heart attack. What the fuck are you talking about? All right. It took us like maybe, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 months to get the UFC's Well, the between Nate's ass too, because Nate's a fucking diva. But yeah, maybe the UFC alone took five months.
Yeah.
You know, us negotiating, bringing certain things to the table and this and that. And finally, they gave me the blessings to go box for 3 matches. So it's like the first time that they let a motherfucker go for 3 matches. Yeah. And I'm still signed to them, obviously. I can't do nothing MMA or nothing like that. But they gave me the permission to go box. And man, I jumped all over. I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to take it seriously. So my boy over there was like, man, they sent me to the Freddie Roach camp. I got trained with Roy Jones Jr. They sent me over there for 10 days. So, I was with the legend himself,
You're in Georgia with him. You're at his home?
In Pensacola.
Yeah, Pensacola. Yeah,
Pensacola. Yeah, so I was over there, what, like 10 days I spent over there with Roy Jones Jr. And I was like, fuck, man. Just to hang out with him was like too much. Like, I can't believe. And he's watching me hit the heavy bag, watching me spar. I'm like, I can't believe
it. It's like a barn, right?
Yeah.
For those.
Like a big old barn. Yeah.
Sick.
I was like, man, I can't believe I'm here. Because he's a Florida boy, man. Yeah. Who didn't like fucking Roy growing up, you know? So that was awesome. Then I got Freddie Roach's. And then I went to Capetillo's. And I had a really good clicking up with him, you know? And these guys really wanted me to get out of Miami. Because Miami's just fucking Miami. And I got a lot of things besides my kids and stuff like that. There's just too much going on. So they wanted me out of there. And I was like, you guys are the ones that brought me back. So fuck it, bro. But however you want to see it, let's go. Let's do it. Let's rock and roll. You know, and shit. I just feel like I got to get that W for my people, for everybody, you know. Got to get a couple W's.
Yeah, so now we're fully into boxing.
Fully.
First opponent, Nate Diaz.
Yes, sir.
Supposedly, if like you mentioned, you know, there's some diva-ish sometimes that happen, you know. Props to Nate. Nate is always, if he's in there, he's a fighter. He's going to fight. You know, so that's in July, I believe. July.
Yeah. June.
June 1st. June 1st. Diaz. So it's basically the rematch that everybody wanted to see. Mm-hmm. We wanted because, I mean, well, not, I wouldn't say everybody, because as a true fighter, MMA fighter that studied the sport, watching you and him go at it the first time, yeah, I already, I knew what's up, you know. And that's no shade to Nate. I just knew what's up.
And so, no, I'm a bad style for him, you know?
Yeah, but that's in MMA.
Yeah.
But now it's boxing. This is where Nate thrives.
Yeah.
So straight boxing. June 1st.
10 rounds.
10 rounds.
How do you, 10 rounds. I mean, you tell me, you break this down. How do you see this going? Because now you can't use your kicks that you brutalized him with.
Mm-hmm. The kicks were did 70, 60% of the damage, you know?
Yeah.
The first one I landed was a kick to, he ducked it. I threw like a left hook and then he ducked and I saw him and the shin hit him in the shoulder, but my foot hit him here and dropped him. And then I was able to stay on him. And then the next time I dropped him was another body kick. So a good amount of the damage was from the kicks, you know? But that's also because I know he's such a bad fucking kicker. Like I feel like he doesn't train with people that kick, you know, or you never cared to evolve to block these kicks. In boxing, I feel like he does a lot of fucking mistakes as well that I'll be able to expose, you know, just from my right hand, whether it be to the body or the face, just the way that he steps kind of mummy-ish and shit. I think I'm gonna fucking TNT his face again, bro. I'm gonna drop the dynamite on him.
So how do you, what would be your prediction for that fight? You think
knock him dead.
You're gonna you put him out. You think you stop him?
Yeah, I know I stop him, bro. Drop him dead. No nothing about a cut, you know? No fucking the rematch, this or that in MMA went this way, so like, no, I want there to be no questions asked. I want to fucking end his ass, you know. And it's not personal against Nate. I don't not like the dude or like him. It's just the nature of the sport, you know. I want to fucking end him dead. And I know I got the power, the speed, and the conviction to fucking do it, you know?
Yeah, and not just that too, man. It's just like the sacrifice that you're making. I mean, you've been in Vegas for so long, being away from your kids, like, you know,
obviously. Since January, just doing the boxing thing, man.
Yeah.
Just waking up with the boxers. What y'all do in the morning? Y'all run and then wait? Okay, let's do it. And then what y'all do in the afternoon, man? And what y'all do? It? Like, bam, whatever they're doing, that's what the fuck I'm doing, you know? And with the tutelage of my boxing coach, just getting that boxing grant. It's like when you first come out to the MMA gym and you left the wrestling world, it's like, what is it that you guys do here? All right, let's get to it, you know?
Yeah. How do you juggle that, George? I mean, obviously, sometimes I see you flying back and forth from here to Florida. I mean, how is it that you're able to juggle, like, your relationship with your kids and just, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, we're all dads.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough. I think it's, like, the toughest thing, you know, because, you know, I retired and my kids were, like, so fucking happy. You know, my daughter's 15, my son's 9 years old. They were fucking like, fuck yeah. You did it, dad. You fun. Not so much my son, but my daughter was with me since we were living like in efficiencies. I don't know if you know what an efficiency is. It's like they'll have like a little house, you know, because you're in Florida, inside of like a side of another house, and you pay like mad cheap ass rent, you know, or fucking in Section 8 living. My daughter was like that with me till fucking I'm a multimillionaire and we're making crazy money now. So my daughter saw that whole thing and she's like, you did it. Like you changed our life around. You changed my life forever. You changed everybody, your mom, my mom, everybody's life got changed, you know? So she's like, I'm so happy that you fucking retired, you know? And my son was too. And then when I told him I was back, she was like, I knew you'd come back. I knew you'd come back. And I'm like, are you mad? She's like, I mean, it's just, and my daughter knows me fairly well. She's like, it's what you do. It's you're a dog and it's your nature, you know? And I just knew, something told me in me that you'd come back. I didn't know it was going to be boxing, but I always knew you'd come back. Yeah. So it definitely hurts because I'm not with them. Like, I got a little routine where I'll do my like morning run. Then I come back to the crib, drop them off at school. I'll go work out again. Then when they're getting out of school, I'll pick them up, hang out with them a little bit. Maybe I train. Maybe I don't do shit again and I just stay with them. But I'm constantly in and out of their life every day or every other day because it's 50-50, you know. The mom got them half the time. I got them the other half. So it's just like built in. Like, there'll be 2 days with the mom. There'll be 2 days with me. Then maybe it's her weekend. She'll go with them. Then my weekend, I get the kids, you know, if it's my weekend. So it's just like we got that dynamic. Now it's like, fuck, man. I don't see him for like 2-3 weeks at a time. Then I go fly back, hang out with them, chill. And they get it, you know. I'm working. I'm fucking doing my thing.
How was the retirement? How was that time off without fighting?
It's the worst.
How?
It's the fucking worst.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of fucking fucked up shit happened during that time too. I stopped training right when I retired. I was like, I don't want to fucking... Because even when I wouldn't have a fight, I'd always do something at least once a day just to keep my body active, you know? But I was like, I don't want to do shit, you know? Fucking smoking every day, getting fucking fat. Now all the parties that I didn't care to go to, now I'm like at every fucking club, at every fucking party. And it was cool for like the first 2 weekends and shit, but shortly after, especially a guy like me, I'm sure you guys can relate to because it's just in our nature. You gotta like feel that adrenaline, right? You gotta get in the treadmill and like push it, you know? You gotta feel that fucking endorphin. You gotta feel it. If not, after a little bit, I started to get depressed, but I've forgotten about that. This is what got me all through my childhood. Just going to the gym, no matter what was going on outside of the gym, as long as I went to the gym, everything will be all right after, you know? And I kind of forgot that, and I started falling into depression. And right around that time, my pops catches another case. Dude goes back in jail, right? And we're still going through that right now. So during that process, I'm like, fuck, I hit rock bottom. Like fucking, nah, below rock bottom. And I decide on that day when he gets locked up again, I go, I'm gonna just put my running shoes on and just go for a run. As long as I could run for, because I haven't done shit in like 45, 50 days, I'm gonna just run and, you know, whatever. And I did it. And immediately after the run, not only was I able to think of solutions for the current problem while I was running and after the run, but I felt so much fucking better. And I swore on that day to myself, whether I fucking ever compete again or not, I'm gonna work out every day. And if I could work out twice a day, cool. But if not, at least I'll work out every day once a day. And shortly after that, my boy Dean calls me with a deal. Hey, I might have this boxing match for you. What do you think? You know, so the retirement for me was like fucking, like not for me, man. Yeah. I'm a dog that needs to be in the field. I can't be in the fucking, in the kennel, bro. I gotta be out in the field getting it. If not, my own brain will eat me up, you know?
Yeah, and I just want to say, as far as you being a parent, obviously you fall into that routine. When you're in Florida and you're training MMA, you fall into a routine where I do this, I do this, I do this. But you have that thing, which is fighting. You have that thing that keeps you centered to where you could exercise all those demons, that keeps you grounded with everything. And first of all, it's hard as hell because we're parents to find that balance, you know, especially with family. But at the end of the day, this is your life. You have to live it to your fullest, to where, because at the end of the day, when you're gone, you're the one who's gone. Yeah. So one thing that I've heard is you have to be okay and know that you did right by yourself, because your kids are going to get their opportunity to be able to make that decision as well. And so have you found something though? Because one day this will stop. Fighting will completely stop. Have you found that one thing that you can pivot to that's going to keep you from slipping into that depression?
Yeah, and you were actually, part of it, you were actually there at my first big show promoting fights, man.
Exactly.
You know, you were there at the Game Bread.
You know? And shout out to you, man, for that, because you know, that's the thing too, is I think as when we're fighters, we don't really think about the other side of it. Like the Dana Whites and these guys, you know, you're giving so many guys opportunities to feed their, you know.
Well, that's what Kimbo did for me. So I always, in the back of my mind, I didn't know how, whether it was, you know, like you guys are doing opening, because this opens up channels for numerous fighters, whether young, old, middle. This is another way for all the people, all the millions that are watching you, all the millions that are watching you, for some dude now that's 1-0 in the UFC to sit here and get all that exposure. It's fucking amazing. You're giving back. So with the fighting thing, I didn't really know, like, man, how can I do something like how Kimbo hooked my ass up and I got fucking 30 million views for that video, you know? And me and my boy Dean, we've been promoting, what, like 3 years now. And we were doing the promotions and stuff, and it was starting to grow. We were doing them out in Biloxi, Mississippi. And then we got our big break. We got a good round of investments and funds, and we were able to throw that show that you pulled up on.
Yeah.
And I knew, like, damn, this is what I could do for life. Like, I'll do this for life. I'll find the next fucking Game Bread or the next Ahud or the next Usman, put him on the platform, get him all these eyeballs, and just go do your thing, man. Go get your 15 seconds of fame and change your life, you know?
Yeah, so shout out to you guys for that, man, because, you know, you guys did give one of my boys, Sean Soriano, you gave him.
Nah, that boy can scrap, man.
Sean is a savage, and but it was almost like that was like thing for him. I remember watching him sitting there watching him at that show, and I was like, damn, this might be his calling right here, yo. This is, you know, because at first I'm like, because there's different layers to it. I'm like MMA with gloves that scared me at first, but then I started doing it. But now I'm watching these guys do bare knuckle MMA. It's a different element, but I'm watching. I'm like, oh. okay, I see why people will be into this. I see this.
And for grapplers, it's like more beneficial actually. Because you take a motherfucker down, you take his back, they can't hold on to your glove. Now you got that back with no gloves and sweaty. This thing is slight. It's like a pig on a blanket. You can't fucking, a sweaty pig. I mean, you can't stop this shit, man.
Yeah. I mean, what an incredible life. What an incredible, journey that you've been on. And I think these are kind of the things that just mold us into the humans that we are. We've talked to some amazing guests, and it seemed to be a common theme with some of the elite fighters, the way that we think and the way that we deal with things. It's often, those traumas and things that we might have dealt with and all the hardships, not necessarily even traumas, the hardships that we go through kind of propel us and form us in a way to where you get in there, you find your arena, you get in there, people can't believe what they're watching because it's
a fish to water.
Yes, because you're just off and running. Yeah. So, hats off to you, man. I know we had our thing, which is, looking back at it, it was amazing. I loved it because we're not only just the training and the preparation that it put us through, but the business part of that we are, because at the end of the day,
it's not the cherry on top. At the end of the day, when you get that check.
Yeah, when you get that check.
2 months later,
it's like, we did that. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at that. But I just want to say, man, thank you. June 1st, you're fighting Nate Diaz, the real rematch now, because now it's a, hopefully for him, there's no excuse. He's a fair shot now. You're not kicking his legs, none of that.
And you got plenty of time to prepare for this motherfucker. It's not like you took this in short notice or nothing. So it's like, man, what's going to be the excuse now when I fucking pile drive your face through the canvas, man? I can't pick his ass up, so I got to.
You do your thing, but man, we appreciate you spending some time with us.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And for all the fight fans, that obviously love and watch you, who I hated when we were fighting each other because they were all on your side. We want to say thank you for being here with us. Jorge Game Bread Masvidal. I'm the... Yes, I am the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
The one and only, the Triple C.
And we are out.